On today's episode of the DFA podcast, we're talking managerial changes, and that means a lot of Dusty Baker talk, Joe Girardi talk, and Gabe Kapler talk. DFA podcast, we're not oiling anything up.
Episode 38 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me again is RJ Anderson. RJ, we're like recording two episodes back to back this week. This is a strange and unusual occurrence for us, but it's fun.
Yeah, we are Brian Shaw right now. So.
Yes. And our arms or faces will probably fall off due to this overuse at some point. But
my vocal cords are already fraying, Brian.
Oh, man. Better call Terry Francona. Tell him to ease up.
He'd probably just tell me to eat a box or two of popsicles. So
this is my cute, clever segue. Terry Francona is a manager, and we're going to talk about managers this episode. We usually don't cover managerial transactions a lot in the transaction analysis beat at BP, and we certainly don't usually cover it on this podcast, but this offseason, there's been a lot of managerial moving and shaking. Six teams have let go of their current managers and look to hire a new one. Five of them have already done so, with the sixth still undecided about who will be leading the field staff going forward. But I think it would be fun to talk a little bit about these managerial moves, what it says about the teams, what some of the more interesting aspects of it are. So I'll let you kick it off by just talking about whatever managerial move most was interesting to you or caught your eye the most out of these ones that have been made.
I feel like we have to go with one of the playoff teams who changed skippers, and probably the one that everyone wants to talk about is the Yankees' decision to let Joe Girardi walk, because it doesn't appear they had one set candidate in mind. They waited until basically every other team had filled their managerial vacancies, which would suggest that they didn't get the top candidates in to even interview. And now they're kind of in this weird holding pattern because of the GM meetings. But the only people they've interviewed so far are the bench coach, Rob Thompson, who's been in the organization for nearly three decades and was Joe Girardi's bench coach for 4 years, which would seem like an unusual pick if you're really going for a new voice, a new direction. The dugout, and Eric Wedge, who, for Christ's sake, is, you know, with due respect to Eric Wedge, you know, he's a retread, and he's not really a successful retread. He had some good years in Cleveland, but you can't even argue that he's the most attractive former Mariners manager out there. I think you could probably say that Lloyd McClendon is that, and Lloyd McClendon has trouble getting, you know, a major league coaching job, unfortunately. I know he just got added to the Tigers staff again. But, yeah, I don't know. Why did the Yankees fire Joe Girardi? And do you think they actually had a succession plan in mind and maybe it just hasn't worked out yet? Or do you think Brian Cashman is just winging it and kind of hoping to get lucky?
I don't know if he's winging it, but I definitely think that this does not seem like it was the plan given how it played out. I don't think that the Yankees were going into this thinking, oh, you know, we're definitely going to let Girardi go at the end of the season. I definitely think that some of the playoff success and the team's overall success might have played into making this decision harder for the Yankees than it would have been otherwise. But it doesn't seem like this decision is based on like team performance or the improvement of young players or managing the clubhouse. It seems to be purely one of those situations where it's a conflict between the front office and the manager, that this might have been more of a personality conflict than anything else. With that in mind, it does seem like this, it at least appears to be a much more off-the-cuff, surprise, spontaneous decision than it does something that was planned out, because I do think otherwise they might have wanted to be involved in some of at least the other managers who have been hired by other teams, the guys who, you know, have been interviewed for other openings, but at the same time, they don't seem to be at least displaying any interest in any of these other manager candidates who have interviewed for some of these other jobs. You don't see them reaching out to a bunch of guys who have been interviewing for some of these other jobs. So I'm not really sure that the Yankees know what they want, and if they do know what they want, it doesn't seem to be what other teams want.
Yeah, and they're casting a wide net. The only guy who is reported to be interviewing with them in the coming week or two, who has been interviewed by other teams as a managerial candidate this offseason, at Hensley is excuse me, Hensley Mullins, who is now the Giants bench coach. They're also going to interview Aaron Boone, which is probably much to baseball Twitter's delight because it could get him off Sunday Night Baseball. I don't, the sabermetrically inclined fan doesn't seem to like Boone too much, but that's an interesting one. And definitely, not a candidate that I think most of us expected anyone to interview this winter. And I did think it was interesting that the Yankees, per Ken Rosenthal, reached out to the Athletics about interviewing Bob Melvin for the position, but were rebuked because Melvin is under contract through 2019, and the A's really have no reason to let him interview elsewhere or let him go anywhere because he seems like a really good fit for them. So they are all over the place, and I don't know. I think it's unlikely they're going to get a manager who is better than Joe Girardi. Maybe they get someone who can develop into a better manager than Joe Girardi, but how long does the education of a manager take? Are we talking about 3 years, 5 years? I don't know.
And do you want to educate a manager when you're in position now to be the top team in the AL East and get back to the ALCS? I mean, that's kind of an open question too.
Right, and you have this young core that's allowing you a lot of payroll flexibility. You have all your expiring big contracts and whatnot. This just seems like a very odd time decision. I mean, like you said, you really want to break in a new manager right now when you have a chance to potentially go on, a 5, 6 year stretch where you're consistently going deep in the playoffs. And I don't know. I would not have made this decision because I think Joe Girardi is a good manager. Obviously, there's something going on behind the curtain that we don't really know about. And, being able to forge those relationships with players is very important. I don't want to understate that. It just seems like a very odd decision and a very odd process from where we're sitting.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about this is that the timing of kind of firing or letting go of Girardi at the end of the process when a bunch of other teams have already hired their new managers, it almost seems like they're kind of dragging him by not allowing him to. He didn't really have the opportunity to be hired by any of these other teams that have had these big managerial openings. You could definitely see a world where the Red Sox or the Nationals or one of these other teams might have wanted to go with Girardi had he been available at the beginning of their search. So I found that kind of interesting too. Maybe the Mets would have tried to keep him in New York, maybe something like that. And so letting him go at the end like this kind of guarantees that he'll have to wait until next year. I do think he's going to have the pick of whatever situation he wants to go to after this, though.
I agree. I actually wrote a piece on CBS about where will Joe Girardi manage next, and I was actually kind of surprised when I looked into it because, off the top of my head, the one that kind of stood out was St. Louis. He played in St. Louis for a little bit. Mike Matheny would seemingly be on the hot seat at some point because, I mean, he's always on the hot seat to us, even though there's never actually evidence that he is on the hot seat. I also thought that, Miami, I don't think that's likely, but the Derek Jeter connection's there, and maybe Jeter likes Joe Girardi more than he likes Don Mattingly, but it's hard to see them wanting to pay Mattingly and Girardi, especially given what Girardi would demand. The Giants, if Bruce Bochy decides to walk away a little early due to his health issues, it's unclear if they have an in-house replacement for him, although I know David Bell has been the rumored name lately. I also threw out the Braves because, I mean, Brian Snicker, I don't think he's long for that job, especially
No.
with Anthopoulos in place now. I don't know if they would turn it over to Bo Porter or even Ron Washington, but my guess is they're going to go outside the organization, and Girardi would give them a really respectable face. And I mean, when was the last time they had a respectable manager to that extent? It would have to be Freddy Gonzalez if you're reaching, and before that, I guess Bobby Cox, obviously, because they haven't really changed managers too often. But the other team, and I am going to be honest with you, I thought this was so clever on my part, and I don't say that very often about myself, but
Ha That's
The
true.
Angels. The Angels, because you have the Billy Epler connection, you have Socha's expiring contract, and you have the potential to kind of wash your hands of Socha and all the power plays and all that nonsense by perhaps moving him into a front office position if he's up for that, or allowing him to pursue another opportunity if he's tired of being there after, I mean, he's been there since 2000. That is
Right.
absurd nowadays for a manager. So maybe he wants to go pursue a fresh opportunity or whatever. Maybe he wants to move into a front office role and spend more time at home. Girardi is a respectable enough name that maybe Socha would be okay hiring him instead of going to one of Socha's charges and promoting from within. I don't know. I thought that was pretty clever, and there's sufficient reason to think that's never going to happen. And part of it is because that's so clever on my part that there's just no way that will ever come to fruition.
I just my favorite idea that I've come up with so far is that the Yankees pay the Marlins to take on the Don Mattingly managerial contract so that they can hire him as the new manager, because the Marlins, as we all know, are desperate for cash, and then Girardi slotting in as the manager of the Marlins. I don't know any team. I cannot imagine Girardi would be really excited about going to work for an organization that seems to care so little about their payroll, but you know, he did it once, maybe he'll do it again. But I and then there's of course the Jeter connection, but I also don't think that's what would be the most likely of all options. It just might be my favorite one.
Yeah, well, my favorite one was suggested by a front office friend. He said the Yankees. It would be funny if after a month or two, a month of this process, the Yankees are like, you know what, we messed up, and Girardi perhaps reflects and decides he can do this or that a little bit better, comes back, and it's the beginning yet once again of a beautiful friendship. But I don't think that's too likely.
No, it doesn't seem to me, by what little I know about Brian Cashman, that that's really in his kind of style as a general manager and president of baseball operations. That doesn't sound very Cashman-esque, but
I agree with that. And I like Cashman. He's a really good general manager.
oh yeah.
This is very out of character for him. And I almost wonder if it came from above, but it really wouldn't make sense if it came from above. I think this had to be a Cashman decision.
Yeah, I
And
think that's very likely.
I think that's a great place to segue to a decision that seemed made above the general manager's head. We're talking about the Nationals. Mike Rizzo reportedly fought for Dusty Baker's retainment. However, ownership decided that they wanted to go a different route after losing in the first round of the playoffs yet again. And they ended up hiring Dave slash Davey Martinez, who had been Joe Maddon's bench coach for basically a decade in both Tampa Bay and Chicago. Brian, do you think they made a good choice here in A, letting Baker go, and B, hiring Martinez?
Well, it's tough because I think in A, letting Baker go, no, they made a bad decision. I think Baker was a great manager for this team. In B, hiring Martinez, I think they made a good decision. I don't see it as net positive, though, and I'm a huge Dave Martinez guy. I think he is overdue for his shot as a big league manager. I think he'll do very well in Washington, but I don't like the firing of Baker. I mean, Dusty Baker today is a very different manager than the Dusty Baker that got all sorts of flack for ruining pitchers' arms in Chicago. We understand, I think, a little bit better now in the sabermetric sphere that in-game management and tactical management may not be as important as managing the clubhouse and the soft factors that another manager does. Baker's got a wealth of experience managing clubhouses, especially veteran clubhouses. He certainly doesn't have the same issues that he had in the past regarding wearing out pitchers' arms. I think he proved that in Cincinnati, and I think he, certainly is not doing any damage to these pitchers' arms in Washington. I don't see huge gaping mistakes that he made, and he's so well respected, and he's got such a great clubhouse presence. He was such a good change from Matt Williams as manager of the Nationals, and his team was successful. Like, not getting out of the first round of the playoffs is not a Dusty Baker problem. That's a Washington Nationals problem. They've never done that without him, let alone with him. So, all those things in mind, I think the Baker firing was kind of short-sighted. But if you are going to bring in somebody to replace him, somebody with the skills and the background of Dave Martinez is a good fit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with all of that. I did not like the Baker decision. And for the reasons you said, I mean, I think Baker outmanaged Joe Maddon in the playoffs. I thought he was pretty much on point. Some of the moves he made backfired. You could argue about playing matchups with Oliver Perez, and
Right.
I get that stuff. But at the same time, if it had worked, we would be singing his praises. And I know the Steven Strasburg decision was kind of mishandled in the sense that, it was poorly presented to the public, but I do, I'll have empathy there, and I'll assume that it was a messy, fluid situation, and just Baker misspoke. So it happens. I mean, I misspeak all the time, that's a
That's
very relatable thing.
absolutely. And the heart of it is that he didn't lose the clubhouse from any reports that we've heard. We've heard nothing but positive things from Nationals players, it seems like, about Baker, which goes pretty much perfectly in line with almost the entirety of his managerial career. So, the misspeaking, I mean, if you get fired for misspeaking in a press conference, there would be no managers. These decisions, the Strasburg thing especially, I think is one of those things where you have a little bit of a disconnect between what the front office wants and what the manager has to say. But again, Mike Rizzo was advocating for keeping Dusty Baker by all accounts, so it doesn't seem like there was any heat between the front office and the field staff the same way there was in New York.
Yeah. And with regards to Martinez, I do think that's a fine hire. And I think he has the skill set to be a good manager. He's walking into a really rough situation, though. You're talking about a clubhouse that seemingly did like or love Dusty Baker. Bryce Harper is in his walk year. The expectations are sky high. Not only does he have to contend with all that stuff, he also has to contend with learning on the job. And I will say, and it's interesting to me, the Nationals do not have the reputation for being willing to pay managers market value or above, but the last two times they have changed managers, they have went all out on the coaching staff.
Right.
This time they brought in Lindqvist, they brought in Chip Hale, they
Kevin
brought
Long.
in Kevin Long, Tim Bogar. Like, these are all names we have heard connected to other managerial jobs or guys who have been managers before in Hale's case. That seems like, oh, Derek Lilliquist as well. I don't think I mentioned him. These are all well-known coaches, and sometimes coaches can be well-known for the wrong reasons. I mean, Joe Espada, the Yankees third base coach who moved to Houston as a bench coach, he's kind of known for being beat up on Twitter a little bit for his go sin, his sin stop decisions. But clearly, a couple organizations think very highly of him, so who knows about that stuff. The point is, the Nationals went all out on the coaching staff. And I think that's really, really smart on Mike Rizzo's part or whomever made those decisions. Because when you have a first-time manager, you're putting him into this really tough situation. You should, back him up with a bunch of veteran, talented coaches who can help take the pressure off him. I think Martinez is going to do well. He has all the makings of a good manager. And thank goodness that at least one team is willing to give a minority a shot, because if the Yankees do not hire a minority manager, we're talking about all these changes this offseason, and I believe just two minority managers added, and Alex Cora and Dave Martinez.
Right.
I mean, if Eric Wedge gets hired, I mean, come on. I have nothing against Eric Wedge, but that's like, let's try something new. You know what I mean?
Well, there's that, and then there's the fact that, it's not a net positive in the Nationals' case because they let go of a minority manager in order to hire a new minority manager, which, that's great that they're doing, hiring multiple minority managers. I mean, it's one of those things that you see very often is where a team hires a minority manager, but then they immediately go back to a white manager afterwards. And
Yeah.
so I appreciate that that this team has been willing to do that. And I mean, quite honestly, it's just kind of very frustrating because there are certainly a number of high quality minority candidates who are getting interviews. They just don't always seem to be hired. Sandy Alomar Jr. was considered by the Mets for their managerial opening. He's been considered by a lot of teams recently. Same is true of Hensley Mullins, who you mentioned before. So I just think that it's what you said about Eric Wedge. If you're going to give a retread a chance, like, why aren't the Yankees looking into Dusty Baker? He seems like he'd be a really great fit. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a guy who's had a history of mediocrity. It could be a new guy, or it could be somebody who's, been a very successful manager in that role.
Yeah, and I mean, I like the Carlos Beltran idea that was floated yesterday by Mark Feinstein about Beltran potentially becoming the Yankees manager. And it was so absurd at first. And then when you think about it, why is this absurd? You know,
Right.
we've had other managers, you know, basically come off the field, and maybe they take a year or two or three off. Maybe they, you know, serve an organizational role. But a few years back, Jason Giambi almost got the Rockies job when he was still an active player. And nobody was really like, oh, that's, I mean, we know we kind of poked fun at it, but then we were also like, why not? You know, why not give a different face a chance? And in Beltran's case, I mean, he was even apparently an intermediary between the Astros front office and the young players when it came to analytics. That's an aspect of Carlos Beltran that I don't think anyone even knew about.
Right.
So, you know, maybe he is a better candidate than we think, and maybe he ends up getting the job, but I don't know. It's just, you know, like, you talked about if you're going to give a retread a chance. Like, I keep going back to Lloyd McClendon because he actually had a winning record in Seattle before he was fired.
That's
And he
right.
was replaced by a dude who had never managed before. And, you know, I think Jerry Dipoto is an okay general manager, maybe even a good general manager. That firing still sticks to my craw, man. Like, just the way that played out. Like, if you're going to fire him and get a clear replacement, a clear upgrade, excuse me, then by all means. But he basically hired, you know, a guy who had no real qualifications and. I don't know. Anyway, let's move
So,
on to.
I was going to say we can transfer pretty seamlessly when we talk about Lloyd McClendon and we talk about some questionable hiring decisions of retreads. We can talk about the Tigers, who I don't think anybody expected that the Tigers, a team that's going to be well into the rebuilding process, they let go of Brad Ausmus, which I understand because Ausmus was kind of a bad manager. That doesn't shock me. He not a good in-game manager, didn't seem to be a wonderful conduit from the front office to the team. He didn't seem to be this fantastic players manager and own the clubhouse. So the Tigers decide to move on. They don't move on to McClendon, who's in their minor league system. Instead, they move on to Ron Gardenhire, which is a very, I would say that's a shocking. This was the most shocking of all the moves that was made as far as front offices go so far.
Didn't really understand that one other than they wanted a placeholder and they wanted someone who had a reputation for being professional and whatnot. Because, again, why not Lloyd McClendon? He was already in the system, he was familiar with some of the players who came up from AAA. You're rebuilding, you're not going to win too many games. Maybe, you know, there's some conflict with Miguel Cabrera and the other veterans there, but I really doubt it. This just seems like, you know, hiring a guy who has. I guess he does have more managerial experience than McClendon, and he probably has more success because McClendon had those years in Pittsburgh. But yeah, I don't know. This is going to be one of those hirings that I'll kind of forget about. And frankly, I had forgotten that Ron Gardenhire was the Tigers manager until you mentioned it. And I even wrote about it a few times. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is just, and nothing against Gardenhire. You know, he overcame cancer this year and seems like a perfectly fine fellow. But yeah, whatever.
I mean, if you look back at Ron Gardenhire's history as manager of the Twins, really he saw almost all of his success in the early stages of his managerial career in, the 2002 to 2004 kind of era. And he is a successful manager, but only barely. He's got a win-loss percentage over the course of his career of 507, which when you count that's 13 different seasons. I'm not sure that's entirely a very good record for a manager over with 12 seasons of history. Now, I get it. There are certain negatives to being the manager of the Twins that not even the best manager can always overcome. So I don't want to put all of that on him. But it just seems kind of strange where the Tigers seem to be one of those teams that was in search of an identity. And if their identity is going to be based around Ron Gardenhire, it seems to imply that their identity is going to be relatively old school because in the past he had had not much of a relationship with analytics. In his introductory press conference, he said, "Oh, yeah, I love analytics now," but you don't really get the impression that that's, I won't say it's not truthful, but maybe he still is not as up to speed or, involved in the analytics sphere as much as, say potentially some of these other managers. And I'm not entirely sure that's a strong negative, but it's a surprising move it's a surprising thing to see the Tigers do when the Tigers over the last couple of years have very much changed their front office, seem to go a little bit more analytics heavy, and now they're going into a rebuilding phase, and Gardenhire isn't necessarily what you would think of as the manager you would want for a rebuilding team. He seems like more of one of those caretaker custodial guys who would thrive more with a more veteran roster.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And you know, the funny thing about this Tigers hiring process is they were also interested in Freddy Gonzalez, who had an article written about him where he also started to become a believer in sabermetrics. So they really seemed to have a type there. They wanted a retread who had seen the light. And you know, from our past conversations about this topic, you know I'm open to a failed manager who perhaps saw the error of his ways and comes back and maybe turns into Clint Hurdle 2.0. Maybe Gardenhire's that guy. Maybe Eric Wedge is that guy. Maybe I'm being too hard on the Yankees talking to him. But I don't know, man. I am skeptical. I think Gardenhire probably gets fired in 2 years and they move on to someone else, and that's that. And we never actually see him manage again. But
There is one quick thing about Gardenhire that I wanted to bring up is that I think from his appearance, we tend to assume he's older than he is. He's not like, when I think of him, I think of like Terry Collins level, like old hand manager. And, he spent those 12 years in Minnesota, so you assume that he's absolutely one of the older managers to get a job. And compared to some of the other candidates this year, he kind of is. But he is, I believe he's just barely turning 60, so it's not like he's a senior citizen out there either.
no, he turned 60 in late October.
Yeah,
So
so.
that is stunning. Yeah, because I would have expected at least 65.
Right.
And maybe he does have more years than that in him. I don't know. But I think we can transition from Gardenhire to Mickey Callaway in New
Sure.
York, who will turn 43 in mid-May. And his ascent has really happened quickly, hasn't it? I mean, a few years ago, I don't think anyone really knew who Mickey Callaway was. He did not have an inspiring big league career, nor a long big league career. And now he is manager of the New York Mets, making the rare jump from pitching coach to manager. And everyone seems to like Mickey Callaway. So is he going to get milkshake ducked, I guess?
I'm sure at some point, because I don't think, nobody survives their reputation in the public sphere very long before, we find some reason not to think of them as a hero and a wonderful person. I hope that's not the case with Callaway. But the thing about Callaway that's so interesting to me is that I think the Mets are obsessed with pitching, and I think it's starting to become something to their detriment. I like Callaway as a hire. I think this is a good hire. Fresh face, pitching coaches that move into a managerial role are kind of a thing that I really like. I think that there are plenty of ones where we've seen some success in the past with guys like Bud Black. So I think this is great. And Callaway's been a very, very effective pitching coach, it seems like, from what little we can know about understanding what field staff does. It seems like he was very successful as a pitching coach in Cleveland, and it sounds like his interviews, like the interview for the job for the Mets, went so well that the Mets basically threw up their hands and said, "We've got to hire this guy," which is a good sign. At the same time, everything that the Mets do seems to be revolved around the pitching staff, and I always have a little bit of nervousness when I hear stuff like that because pitching isn't 50% of baseball. It's less than 50% of baseball. And so run prevention kind of to me seems like, the Mets have had this obsession with their starting pitchers, and now they're talking about maybe doing some tandem pitching or some shorter outings, which may work out just fine and may be a good choice for them to make. But it seems like everything that the team talks about really kind of focuses on pitching, and I think the rest of the team could use a little bit of attention as well.
Yeah, and I will add that I really like Mickey Callaway's background story. I don't know if you read the article. I don't remember who even wrote it at this point. I want to say it was in the New York Times, but basically, Callaway, he was injured, I believe it was, and he Googled pitching coach jobs for colleges, and he went to this little school and somehow helped turn them around and whatnot. And it was just really, really something to read the article. And he was like, I knew these guys wanted it when they were asking me to throw more and more BP. And I don't know, that's just such an unusual story, how a guy got into pro coaching. Was he just Googled, college pitching coaches jobs and ended up becoming their manager because nobody else wanted the job, and somehow he made it work, and he kind of pulled himself up by his own cleat laces and whatnot. And yeah, I'm curious to see how this goes. He seems like a likable enough lad, and I don't know. I do like the idea of hiring a pitching coach because they're used to micromanagement. They're used to dealing with a bunch of weirdos, because we all know pitchers, particularly left-handers, are just the oddest of birds, long hair and all that. So yeah, I am hopeful about this one. I don't have a feeling that it's necessarily going to fail. I don't know how successful he'll be, because that is, again, a weird situation, a tough situation, given all the injuries. And the manager can't really prevent injuries. He can perhaps help the organization better prepare itself to prevent and deal with injuries. And that seems to be, if you believe some of the articles that have come out of New York lately, part of what Callaway intends to do. They're adding to their training staff. Like you mentioned, they are going to adjust how they use their starters, which that may or may not work. I don't think we can really confidently say either way. If anything, maybe it'll lead to more relief pitcher injuries, which I guess if you're choosing between the two, you would prefer your relievers to get injured rather than your starters. But
Especially since all the Mets relievers are not very good at this point, I think you would choose that.
I mean, if they're all replacement level, what difference does it make, right? If you ignore the human aspect there and just go cold and calculated, you'd rather your replacement level relievers get hurt than anyone else. But hopefully nobody gets hurt, for the record. But yeah, it's a weird situation, and I suppose this is where we transition to a different first-time manager who maybe isn't feeling the love quite in the same way. Talking about Gabe Kapler in Philadelphia, he had perhaps the oddest press conference moment of all time for a rookie manager when a reporter asked about his varied and, let's just say, odd usages of coconut oil. And
Yeah, we can leave it at that, I think.
yeah, I mean, the man loves his coconut oil, literally and metaphorically. So, Kapler, do you think this is going to work, or do you think that in a few years we're going to look back on this as a failed experiment?
So I was actually asked about this on a radio hit in Hawaii, and which is, again, everything about the Kapler hire has been weird. That's weird too. I honestly think that Kapler is a good hire. However, he is more outspoken, more, we could throw the word quirky out there, and he's not terribly, he's a new manager. He's not somebody who has a lot of field staff experience. He has experience as a director of player development in the Los Angeles organization. He's certainly got experience being on the field. He's a very thoughtful guy, which is kind of sometimes at odds with his public persona, I think, because he comes across as a little bit of a, I don't know if bro is the right word, but he's very into fitness. He's very into, I would say he takes care to project a certain sort of image, and I think that for some people, that's very off-putting. But at the same time, he was a superstar in baseball writing circles for a little bit before he got picked up by the Dodgers because he comes across as somebody who's very open, he's very thoughtful, and almost most importantly to me, he's very focused on young players' personal health, mental health, physical health, and that's a great fit for this Phillies team. That is a absolutely fantastic fit for this Phillies team. Now, whether or not he can handle the Philadelphia media, whether or not he's up to the challenge of running a clubhouse, which is not just going to be young guys, but it's also going to be some veterans and maybe some people who don't buy his brand of, positivity and lifestyle tips, that kind of remains to be seen. But I'm like totally on board with this deal. I could definitely see it going like Bobby Valentine wrong too.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And the opposite side of the idea that he's open-minded and all kind of came through in the John Heyman piece, who wrote about why Kapler is polarizing. And yeah, it seemed, at least the way Heyman presented it, it did seem like maybe some of this is a little manufactured in a way to play the press. And that was kind of one of the common barbs thrown John Coppola's way after he was fired, as they really knew how to play the press. And I mean, I don't know, maybe Kapler did the same thing. It's interesting that, for the record, he does have a little bit of managerial experience because he managed in the minors for one season back when he was pseudo-retired for a year. But the point is, it is interesting that the Dodgers chose, Dodgers ownership rather, chose Dave Roberts over Kapler when they were, picking their new manager. And then Kapler was actually supposed to be on the field staff until like a month later. They just removed him for whatever reason and kept him in the front office. And, let's not ignore the Nick Francona issue, which again was another example of maybe Kapler being too intense, or his, let's say, empathy being, I don't want to say, manufactured or whatever, but there's certainly some questions about what went on there, and there are other questions about how Kapler's intensity and how his interpersonal skills and emotional intelligence will translate one, to a managerial role. And basically what I'm saying here is Odubel Herrera is going to get blasted at some point, isn't he, for not running it out? Because I just cannot envision a season or two going by about Kapler just, melting down about Herrera. And I could be wrong, but yeah, it was a really interesting press conference, because
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just gonna say, Tommy Ransell compared him to John Cena, the professional wrestler. And I went back and I watched some of the Kapler clips, and I was like, yes, this is absolutely John Cena. This is incredible.
Yeah, it's and you get that little bit of, hey, maybe he's cutting a wrestling promo and not really doing the normal authentic, straightforward managerial press conference. But then again, I mean, almost every manager is putting on some sort of performance when they do their press conferences. So, maybe just the way that he does it, comes across as a little more artificial, but maybe it's not any more artificial than, the folksy down-home charm of Terry Collins with the Mets or, whatever, kind of things that Joe Girardi says. It doesn't look the same. You're absolutely right.
No, you're right. And I believe this is a good time to move to a different manager hire who actually has some television training and, who actually has, just 1 year on a big league bench. So he actually has a little bit more experience than Kapler in this role, but excuse me, in coaching in the majors, not in the managerial role. And that's Alex Cora, who the Red Sox hired. He's coming directly from the world champion Astros bench. And he's also served as the general manager of Puerto Rico baseball. So he has a bit of a varied background. And I don't know, based on everything that everyone has said about Cora, he seems like a fine hire. He seems like a good managerial prospect. This is an interesting situation he's walking into because they made the playoffs last season. And clearly that was not good enough for Dombrowski and company, although there seemed to have been some personality clashes behind the scenes that were not too privy to. So I think this is a fine hire. I don't have any strong takes on it other than, it's a fine hire. And again, it's good to see a minority candidate actually get a shot.
I basically feel exactly the same way you do here in the heart of Red Sox County, country where I live. It seemed a little bit polarizing, but not really. Like, I think people kind of all are in the boat of, well, we don't know much about him, but everybody seems to like him, so this should be a good hire. And I think you hear that a lot with these younger managers who are not far removed from being on the field, who have had maybe a little bit of time as a coach or a manager, and then kind of thrust into these roles. Boston's a tough market. The front office is going to be tough. You've got a really kind of crazy clubhouse in Boston. You have for a long time. But Cora's got a great reputation working with players, being kind of, you would expect him to come out of this being kind of a player's coach, given everything I've heard about him in the past. So I think that's a really good fit. But then, you still have to have a guy who's not that far removed from being a player trying to deal with the big ego of David Price and some of these other players. And Chris Sale is, not always the easiest guy to manage. And you kind of see some of the, starting pitcher behavior, I guess is the best way to put it, that comes through in some of these guys. And so, You got Hanley Ramirez, you've got some other players, and so you've got to manage a lot of like strong veteran personalities like Dustin Pedroia, but then you've also got to try to figure out how to manage like your Rafael Devers and Andrew Benintendi, your young talent. This is not for beginners. This is not an easy clubhouse, and we're just kind of unsure what Cora is going to be like. If it were me and I were the Red Sox, boy, I would have liked to known Dusty Baker's available because I think that might have been a good fit. I would have been more inclined to go with a guy who's got a longer term of experience working with a veteran clubhouse. Joe Girardi would be a great fit, but I think Cora will probably do fine. We could be wrong, but it sounds like he's got all the tools to do a great job.
So for ranking the managers and likelihood of doing a good job, I think we would agree that at the very top of the list, or excuse me, let's start with the bottom of the list because that's more interesting. Bottom of the list, probably Gardenhire, right?
Yeah, probably. Or, if the Yankees decide not to hire anybody, they would be at the bottom of the list, but probably Gardenhire.
Okay, and then moving on from there, and we only have five of these because we don't know who the Yankees are going to hire at this point anyway. So Gardenhire, I would say Kapler is probably agreed upon to be fourth.
Yeah, he's the guy who's got like super high risk, super high reward. Like, I could see that going just so poorly. But I also think if he does, he has a possibility to have a higher ceiling than maybe any of the other managers in this list.
Yeah, I could see him going. I mean, we talked about Yanni Green a few times as being the new Joe Maddon or, being possessed by the same spirit that possessed Earl Weaver back in his day, because it only goes around possessing little utility infielders, but fiery utility infielders at that. But okay, so moving on, number three, are we gonna go with Callaway or are we gonna go with Cora or Martinez? Because my guess is we're gonna go with Callaway.
Mine's either, it's really hard for me to separate between Cora and Callaway in this. I think that if, Callaway again probably has a slightly higher ceiling, and I think Cora probably has a slightly higher floor. So you could pick either way for me. I will go with Cora as my three.
I will go, of course, my three, so we can keep this list unified. And then that means Callaway is number two. I don't think either of us is going to put Martinez number two. So we're going to agree that David Martinez is the most likely of these five to succeed.
Yes, absolutely. I also think he has the highest bar to clear because I think if the Nationals like don't get out of the wild card game or don't make it out of the first round of the playoffs next year, he might get fired.
See, I don't think they would do that, but then again, they have done some things that I did not anticipate. Oh man, that would be horrible if Dave Martinez waited a decade to get a gig and then all of a sudden gets fired because he won 93 games, the division, and then lost a hard-fought five-game series against the Cubs or Cardinals or whomever in the first round.
But I mean,
And especially it was because of Jose Lobatone being caught off the bag again.
like imagine Max Scherzer gets injured or something, and inexplicably the Nationals don't win the East or they don't make the playoffs. Like, I cannot imagine that there would be any circumstance in which the Nationals management might be like, well, F it, we're out. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a weird situation that he's walking into.
Yeah, and it's a pressure-filled situation. Of course, all of these gigs are pressure-filled. This is not an easy job, not in
No
any
small
market.
markets. No small
Well,
markets
maybe
here.
Tampa Bay. I mean, Kevin Cash, he has. I mean, no one even talked about firing Kevin Cash, and he's not even finished above 500 yet. And it doesn't seem like he's anywhere near the hot seat. So maybe Tampa Bay is a small market. Everywhere else,
Well, and I
Yes.
mean, especially all these new hires. I mean, it's Detroit's probably the smallest market of anyone who's got a new manager coming in, and that's not saying very much. But I would put money on Cash being the first firing of next year. I honestly think that if the Rays were willing to pay for two managers at once, they might have let him go. But
Really?
it wouldn't surprise me.
See, I would go with Snicker because I looked at that photo from yesterday of Alex Anthopoulos and Snicker, and Anthopoulos was just like in his mind, like, this is what this dude wears to meet me. When can I fire him? You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, that's true.
Anthopoulos just had that look in his face, like he was completely I don't know. And, Snicker has been an organizational soldier for them for a long, long time. And I have plenty of respect for that, plenty of respect for him. But I just don't think he's going to last very long as manager. And you know
That's a
what?
very
If
good
we
point.
weren't, like a week away from Thanksgiving and it didn't seem like the individuals above Anthopoulos' head didn't like or love Snicker, I would assume they could still fire him and make a change because I just don't think he's long for that job at all.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think you're right in that Snicker's more likely to move on than Cash. I will throw one other name out there, not as a firing, but as a reswizzling of position. Unfortunately, I've heard about Ned Yost and his injuries, and
Yeah.
I mean, it would not surprise me at all if he's unable to make it through an entire season as the Royals manager, because he had some life-threatening injuries as a result of his fall, and I could certainly see the Royals wanting to limit his workload, but I hope he makes a full recovery.
Yeah. And, there was been talk about him potentially moving on slash retiring anyway. He said that he wasn't going to see this rebuilding project through, which is not usually what you hear from managers. But, Ned Yost always says some stuff that you don't usually hear from managers. I remember his passionate rant against Bee genocide a few years back as one of the highlights of the Orioles' past half decade when he was basically just beside himself that they would kill all those bees instead of doing what else, whatever else they would do with large hordes of swarming bees that could potentially, brutalize individuals. But the point is, if we lose Ned Yost as a manager, we're losing an incredible source of entertainment, quote-wise, and I'm not ready to give up that ghost. But the good thing is, Yost seems to be in better health than he was or could have been, and that's a good thing. So hopefully he does make it back for at least one more year because, again, I really need those Ned Yost quotes, Brian.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. And never let it be said that R.J. Anderson was willing to give up a ghost. I think that's
Dun dun dun.
And with that horrible joke, we can close up this episode of the DFA podcast. R.J., any final closing thoughts on managers or on the next few days?
Not really. I like my Earl Weaver spirit and have inhibiting fiery utility infielders, but that didn't seem to play too well with you. So I'm gonna have to work that out as a longer fleshed out theory and treat
That's
the public to it.
I think that you'll do fine with that going
What if I
forward. I
get
may
sued,
not be your
Brian?
target demographic for that horrible joke, but
I'm gonna get scooped. So, this is like that tweet where it was like, I've been working on that story for a year, and he just tweeted it out like, I'm gonna have this 100-page theory outlined, and then, Tyler Kapner or whomever is gonna tweet out, breaking news: Andy Crane has been inhibited by the same spirit who possessed Earl Weaver, and that would be the end of Tyler Kapner's reputable career, unfortunately. So don't do that, Tyler.
Yeah, don't make the RJ jokes, I guess, if you're looking to stay on as a highly talented writer like RJ. But we will go ahead and move on. But if you want more DFA podcasts, come to Baseball Prospectus and read my work. Come to CBS Sports Baseball and read RJ's work. You can find us on Twitter at DFA Podcasts. You can email us, dfapodcast@baseballprospectus.com. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. Please rate and review us. Help us climb the ladder, as it were, of baseball podcasts, if you are so inclined and feel the need to help us out in our careers a little bit. But other than that, we will be taking a short break, and we will hopefully see you guys next week.
Yep, designate those turkeys for assignments well, folks.
Thanks.